You are listening to The Overwhelmed Brain. Today's episode is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com, quality attorneys at established law firms for about 20 bucks a month. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, personal empowerment coach and host of The Overwhelmed Brain. I am here to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult your physician or therapist or psychologist, anyone that you use and spend a lot of money with. Always consult them before making any changes to your medical treatment. All right, this is the New Year's show. Not really, but it is happening on New Year's Eve. And for those of you who are just hearing this show for the first time, it may be June 6th to you. I don't know. But it's New Year's right now as I record this. And I just posted something in the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment Group. If you're not familiar with that, go to Facebook and look for the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment Group. It's a closed group where you can ask questions and share your concerns or comments and make friends with people that are on a path to their empowerment. And every now and then I poke in there and see what's going on and answer questions and things like that. So it's a group that you can, like I said, share and ask questions and feel safe in, because I want it to be a safe group. So that means that I don't accept bad behavior. So if someone toxic comes in there, guess what? I'll honor my boundaries and yours and get rid of them. Or at least have a talk with them and say, what's going on? Why are you being so toxic? Probably won't use those words. But if you have a chance, check it out. The Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment Group. Anyway, I posted something in there recently about New Year's and about resolutions. And I said that I don't do New Year's resolutions. Because if I'm not resolving something throughout the year, and I only do it once a year, it probably won't stick. I probably won't do it. For example, if the new year was coming in 3 months and I said, you know, coming in the new year, I'm going to start exercising. If I did that and set that date, I think it would be, well, first of all, it would be an incentive because, okay, come the new year, I'm going to change things. I don't mind setting a date to do something. I actually encourage that. Because it can be helpful to go, you know what, on this date, I'm going to do it. And it usually works best when you want to get rid of something in your life or you want to make a huge change in your life. Like, if my partner doesn't change by June 1st, then this is going to happen, or I'm going to leave, or I'm going to kick him out or her out. Those kind of dates can be very powerful. And that's why I encourage it. And it can be very helpful. But for New Year's, it seems like we're all, I don't know, maybe it's peer pressure. Like, what are you going to do for New Year's? What are you going to resolve? And I've learned that over the years, every time I try to resolve something on New Year's, I don't. It just doesn't happen. So that means that that doesn't work for me. I don't know if it works for you, but I'm talking to the people that it doesn't work for. If it works for you, don't change a thing. If it doesn't work for you, or you start it and then it fizzles out, like, oh, I worked out 3 times a week for 3 weeks, and then twice a week, and then I forgot where the gym was, and then I had a vacation, and, you know, it doesn't pan out sometimes. So if that's you, then I want to share with you what I do. I just don't do them. I don't do New Year's resolutions. I just look at my life where it is today and try to figure out what I need. Now, if it happens to fall on New Year's, that's great. And I can start to resolve something in my life. And if that means I'm going to work out, if that means I'm going to change my diet or change how I communicate with certain people in my life, remove certain toxic people from my life, and whatever that is for you, then I have found it to be more successful when you don't do it around New Year's. Again, I'm only talking to you if you do New Year's resolutions and they don't pan out. So if they do pan out, you're good. If they don't, then I recommend you resolve whatever needs resolving in the moment and you don't wait for the date. And that might mean you have to explore that in yourself and figure out, okay, what do I want to do differently? What do I want to change about my life? So anyway, that's what I posted in the Facebook group. You know, do you do New Year's resolutions? And if you do, do they stick? And if you don't, this is what I do. So again, I think what happens is that we fall under the peer pressure. Like, what are you going to do for New Year's? What are you going to do for New Year's? And that peer pressure isn't enough incentive, isn't enough maybe accountability. You know how you hear about accountability partners. If you go to the gym, it's nice to have someone else there to encourage you to meet you every Tuesday and Thursday and, you know, whatever, Saturday. And then if you don't show up, they're like, where were you on Saturday? And you're like, So it's nice to have that accountability partner if you are looking to make a change for yourself. Or if you have the self-discipline to do it, then, you know, certainly do it. But if you're like me and the incentive isn't strong enough around New Year's, then make the change when you want to make the change. Resolve to do what you need to do when you need to do it. I know it's not always easy. I know it's not always fun. It's not always something that can happen overnight. But it's a step in the right direction. It's the beginning. It's like if you want to start going to the gym, then you find out where the gym is. And you find out how much it is if they charge you, unless you're part of a complex that has a gym, you know, an HOA or an apartment complex. And find out what time they open. You just take the first step. And the second step may take you a week later, or it may take a month later. But always have it on your mind and you move towards it. This is goal setting for people who hate setting goals, which I have an episode on, by the way. You might want to check it out. If you hate setting goals, goal setting for people who hate setting goals. That's what I do. I like to set direction. I like to look at the compass and go, that's the direction I want to go. And then I set my direction and I keep moving in that direction. What that means is A, I find out the address to the gym. B, I find out how much it is. C, I call the gym. D, I go to the gym. I get their, you know, free walkthrough or free use for a week. E, I start going. And so on and so on and so on. Now, that doesn't have to happen in one day. It could happen in a week. It could happen in a month. But it's a direction. As long as I'm taking the first step, I take the second step and the third step until I get to the point where, okay, this is it. This is where I step into the gym and I do my thing. And that's just one example. But you get the idea. You always move in that direction so that you can come to a resolve in whatever you're doing and make a change for yourself. I hope I'm using that word resolve right. If I'm not, I'm sorry. Resolution, resolve, that's how I've read it's used. And it makes sense because I want to resolve something in my life. I want to resolve this thing I'm going through. And how do I do it? Well, I have to resolve to do it so that this challenge that I'm going through or this thing that I'm going through comes to a resolution, comes to a conclusion, so that I can move forward, take a step toward my success, take a step toward your success, keep moving in the direction that takes you where you're going, and Happy New Year. Be right back. All right, getoutofthemess.com. That's all I'm going to say. This is the shortest sponsored ad ever. All right, I'll add a few more seconds. Call Asha at 678-355-8777. Why? Because she is an independent associate for Legal Shield, and if you ever need legal advice or even legal services for any reason, whether it's for home or business, maybe your kid got into trouble or is going to get into trouble. Maybe you know something that they don't because you know how kids are. or if you just want what Asha calls legal insurance. Connect with her, ask her questions, find out if this service is right for you. She's not an attorney, she's just there to help you understand what this service is all about and if it will work for you. If you're in the US or Canada, connect with her. 678-355-8777 or go to getoutofthemess.com. Told you it'd be short. All right, welcome back. I'm going to read you an email from someone I'm going to call Sandy. Sandy says, "Hi, Paul. What do you think of guys or people?" I'm not sure if she meant to say it that way. She might have meant to say people in general, but I just think it's funny how it's worded, so I'm just going to use it. What do you think of guys or people that say that all of his exes manipulated and forced him to be nice to them? My boyfriend constantly says all his exes were toxic and horrible and listed all the bad things they were doing to him, and I'm finding myself doing the same things to him that his exes did, like wanting him to be loving and say nice things. Sometimes I kind of push him to say nice things, but he gets back at me and says mean things instead. I'm feeling unloved and losing my confidence just like his exes did, and just so many other things that are similar to all his exes and me. From what he said, his exes were crazy and toxic, but they are all now healthy and normal and have very healthy relationships with other people. I'd love it if you talked about this on your show because there are a lot of people, mainly guys, that are like that." All right, Sandy, thanks for sharing that. And it's a great question, and I have a very simple answer. Look at the common denominator. I don't know a thing about your boyfriend. I'm only going by what you just said. But from the way you're describing it, I talk about it in my Mean Workbook, and you can find this term online. There's something called gaslighting, crazy making. If you look that up, you'll find that the way you're becoming with him is typically what happens when there's some sort of emotional abuse or manipulation going on. I get a lot of letters regarding emotional abuse and manipulation, but some people don't even realize that's what they're asking. And I'm here to say that's what you're asking. Am I in an emotionally abusive relationship? The answer I'm going to say, without knowing too much, and this is really making a huge assumption on my part, I know it is, that you're in an emotionally abusive relationship. The reason I say that is because when there's one person where everyone else has the problem but that person, and wherever they go, people have a problem with him, that's the common denominator. That is the factor, that is the variable that's taking place here. I can speak from experience. I look at my own life and see that every person that I dated or lived with or married left me. That's saying something. That's saying that all of these people that I was with are either bad news or unhealthy or toxic, or I'm the one that's the problem. If you don't want to use the word problem, use challenge. Use unhealthy. Use unhealed. But I finally got to a point where I got sick of people leaving me. I had to get to that point where I looked back and said, what is the most common thing in every one of these scenarios? And the most common thing was they left me. So that meant that I had to stop focusing on other people and started focusing on myself. Now, what does this mean for you? Well, he's not the one asking, you are. So to alleviate the crazy making going on in your relationship, here's what I'm going to say. And it's an analogy. The analogy is, when you go to a job interview, do you tell your potential employer that your last boss was a jerk and he or she never understood you and always gave you too much work? And, you know, do you say these things about the people that hired you before? Do you say these things about your former employers? The rule of thumb is no. You never talk bad about your former employers, because guess who it makes look like the problem? You. It makes you, the potential employee, look like the problem. And most of the time, you are. This is very practical knowledge that everyone should know. When everyone else is a problem in your life, you're usually the root of the problem in some way and also the solution. Meaning if people leave you or people are toxic toward you, then what's probably happening is the way you behave makes them toxic. Or the way you behave, and this, I know people are yelling at me right now. Let me rephrase that. There are toxic people that you don't make toxic. What I'm saying is that your allowance or enabling of them in your life to be toxic are what keep them toxic to you. Again, if you don't like these terms I'm using, use some other term. If they're not toxic, they're unhealthy, they're a challenge, they're a problem. But when you look back in your life and you see that I've attracted all the wrong people, I'm with people who treat me terribly, I'm with people that don't have my best interest in mind, I'm with people that are all hurtful to me in some way or whatever. When you have this thought process going on, you are almost always the one that needs to do something to change so that this doesn't happen to you anymore. Again, case in point, myself. I thought I was the nicest guy. I was showing up in these relationships as Mr. Generous, Mr. Supportive, Mr. Happy. I never showed my bad side. I was always, you know, serving my partner in whatever way I can. Don't get up. I'll get you a drink. Don't do this. Don't do that. I'll take care of it. But I also had these other issues I didn't even know about because I was stuck on people-pleaser mode, because I was stuck on rescuer mode. I just had dysfunctions that were going on inside of me I didn't realize. So as my relationships failed over and over again, I decided to look at the behavior I was doing and said, okay, what's wrong with that behavior? And that started my process. I mean, there was a lot of other things I did, but that process of starting to focus on me instead of focusing on someone else was what changed the people around me. And those people either stuck around because they were healthy and I allowed them in my life, or they left because they were unhealthy and I wouldn't stand for it anymore. But quite often in my relationships, I was usually the unhealthy one because I would attract nice people because I was a nice person, but I had issues. I had these challenges to deal with. Like when I was married, I used to judge my wife a lot. And if she put junk food in her mouth, I would be judgmental and I would give her the eye and I would emotionally withdraw, which is a form of emotional abuse. And because of that, she felt unloved and unwanted and she didn't feel safe because I would make her feel guilty about things that she already felt bad about. And I would just put her through the ringer. And it was not nice. And I wish I could have treated her differently, but what happened happened and I went through the process and so did she. And she eventually wanted to separate and get a divorce. So that caused our marriage to dissolve. But during the last year of the marriage, I realized what I was doing. I realized how much I was focused on her and her problems. And if she would change, then the marriage would be better. Our relationship would get better. Everything about us would get better if she would just do what I wanted her to do. And this is where I'm going with you, is that if you're in a relationship where your boyfriend, all he wants you to do is what he wants you to do, and he won't be happy otherwise, then he is the common denominator for all the problems in his life, and you are not the problem. You may be part of the problem. You may be the person that sticks around while he does bad behavior, but you may not even know he's doing bad behavior. But from what it sounds like, if all his exes, while they were with him, suddenly became toxic, and then after they left and they got into, quote, good relationships, whatever that means for them, and they're happy and healthy and they act differently, then what he does makes you crazy or causes an issue in some way. So as you become crazy, and that may not be the best term, but as this possible gaslighting is going on, you become less and less trustful in your decisions about yourself, your belief in your decisions, your belief in yourself in many ways, because what the manipulator or emotional abuser will do is turn you against yourself. When you come up with a great idea, he will point out how it's a bad idea and make you feel bad about it. When you think of something that will help the relationship, he may find another way that helps the relationship and then make you feel guilty for coming up with something like that because it wasn't his idea or it didn't serve him or it didn't benefit him in some way that made him more superior in you. I mean, there's all kinds of things we can look at in that situation, but certainly from your letter, from the way you explained it, what's happening is that your boyfriend is the common denominator, and whatever behavior he is doing is most likely causing these people that were with him in the past and you who is with him now to feel like you have to change your behavior to get your needs met. Because one of the things that you said was you just want him to be loving and say nice things. That tells me that he's probably not being loving and saying nice things. And if he's not doing that, then you're probably not getting your needs met because you're probably a person that appreciates being loved and being spoken nicely to, you know, being complimented. If that's not going on and you want him to do it and he isn't doing it, then, and I'm going to go out on a limb here because this is totally opposite of what I just said, you may be making yourself crazy. You may be causing, well, it's not completely opposite because you being in the relationship, bringing this into your life, makes you the challenge in your own life. Being with someone who may be incapable of loving you in a way that you want to be loved and saying things that you want them to say means that you are trying to squeeze blood from a stone. He may be incapable of it. He may not want to show his emotions. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm saying there are people out there that don't like to be emotional. Like my last episode, I talked about my girlfriend. She doesn't often say that she loves me, but she definitely loves me because of her behavior. So is my girlfriend being manipulative, or is she just incapable of doing it and I expect more? So this is the other side of the coin, where if he's not being emotionally abusive, it's possible that you want more from him than he could ever give, and he keeps attracting women in his life that are emotionally needy, and I'm not calling that a bad thing, they're just more needy for an emotional connection, and they can't get it, so they become even more needy because they don't get any, and you might be in that category. I'm in that category. If I don't get it, then I become more needy for it. And if my partner isn't capable of showing it at all, then I'm not getting my needs met, and I want even more, and I'll find ways to pull it out of her or whatever. That's not happening with me, but it sounds like that's what's happening with you. So, A, either he is emotionally abusive in some ways or a lot of ways, and he's doing things that cause you to feel a certain way about yourself, because emotional abusers are experts at making you feel bad about yourself and distrust yourself so that you'll rely on them more and more, even though they're the ones that are creating this scenario for you. That's either happening, or B, he's just more emotionally disconnected than you would prefer in a relationship, but he's kind and respectful in other ways, but he's just not enough. He just doesn't have enough of emotional connection in himself to connect with you. You know, there might be something else going on there where it's not purposeful. He's not purposely trying to hurt you. He just may not have it in him, and he may need to do some healing on that if he really wants to. So there could be that side of the coin as well. So if you really want to find out if there's some sort of emotional abuse, you can go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean and get the Mean Workbook. Otherwise, from what I've said here, maybe you can assess what's going on in your relationship and figure out if it's more you bringing this on yourself because he's not capable of doing it, or more him causing you to feel a certain way about yourself. And the deeper you get into the relationship, the more bad you feel inside because of how he's structuring the relationship. If you feel bad and he's there to support you, he becomes the good guy and/slash the abuser. So I'm not sure where you are in that, but I hope my insights and opinions help here. Thank you so much, Sandy. Thank you for writing. I wish you the best. I hope things are better. Send me an update sometime. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. All right, we are back, and I'm going to read you an email from someone I'm calling Bob. Bob says, I just learned about this podcast a few days ago and downloaded all of them. I've listened to quite a few episodes so far, and I really like the way you approach problems, and I envy your ability to speak your thoughts so clearly. That took a lot of practice, Bob. I just listened to the Yeah But Mentality episode, and toward the end, you made a comment about free will and how it might be debatable whether we have it or not. My friend and I have spent a lot of our communication texting with each other this past week talking about exactly that. He often seems to think that we're guided along in life, that everything happens for a reason, and we were destined to meet, things like that. And although I certainly feel that way at times, I don't see how it's compatible with free will, which is also a belief of mine. I heard once that life is about choices, and in any given moment we have an infinite number of choices. It's hard for me to argue with that. It seems correct. I feel like it's my choice whether or not to send you this message, for instance, and I'm ultimately responsible for all the actions I've ever taken or thoughts I've ever had because I chose to think that thing or do that thing. But sometimes I dream some really weird things, and I wonder how on earth my brain can even imagine such things. I wake up and say to myself, yeah, I'm weird, but I'm not that weird. And I wonder how those thoughts ever got into my head. And I've dreamed up bad things before where I made decisions I hope I never make in real life. But for the most part here, I'm talking about weird stuff that doesn't seem like it could have possibly been created by me. And do I even have a choice to dream or not to dream? I don't know, but it sure feels like I don't. I've also wondered if what I believe is true and we have all these infinite decisions that we can make at any moment. It should be possible that we never choose to do anything wrong, at least in theory. But that seems like a pipe dream even for just one person, much less the whole world. I've already done things wrong, so a lifetime of right is out of the question for me. But if I could, I would go the rest of my life and not do anything wrong. Except I wonder if that's even an option for anyone. I'm sure most people want to make the right decision every time, but I don't know anyone who does. I suppose it's part of learning, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on free will. Okay, Bob, that is a philosophical question. I consider myself a philosophical person, but my strength is not in philosophy. What that means is that I am a thinker. I like to think things through. I like to try things on. I like to actually feel what it's like to have a belief system or not have a belief system. And I play all kinds of scenarios in my mind to figure out what works and what doesn't, and basically what serves me and what doesn't. So I really enjoy going through my own beliefs, my own values, my own morals, my ethics, everything else on my mind, just to find out if everything still serves me, if everything is still a benefit to me in some way. I don't do it all the time, but when questions are posed like this, it gives me an opportunity to go, okay, how do I feel about that? How do I think about it? And what's my take? And so I'm going to give you my take. I didn't even have to give you that preamble. So just fast forward through this part in retrospect. So here's my take. First of all, I saw a talk once with a neuroscientist, and I think several neuroscientists have agreed that free will is questionable only because decisions are made before we're consciously aware of it. And they've done some studies where they are able to detect when the moment of decision is made before you're consciously aware of it, and then you consciously take action on it. That action may be something you say, something you do, some intention that you make, something you think, but it becomes very conscious at that point. And when it's conscious, then at that point, you have free will. I'm only speaking on my philosophy, my theory. I'm not backing this up with double-blind tests. I'm only telling you what I've learned and what I've tried on in myself. You can look at this as when does instinct happen, or where does it happen, and then when do you act on that instinct? So instinct could be some animal behavior that we have inside of us that is a very low-level subconscious thing that we sense something is right or wrong or whatever. And then we act on that instinct and we think that action is our free will to do so, which it probably is, because action can be very conscious, but action can also be unconscious. Sort of like when your eyes are open and you're looking forward and then a frisbee comes at your face, Do you have enough conscious reaction time to move out of the way, or is that your unconscious mind protecting you? If it's your unconscious mind, was that free will? I don't believe that I could consciously move out of the way fast enough of an incoming object if it's so close that I don't even have time to register it. I mean, I don't know if you've tried this, but if you've ever stuck your toe in hot water, how long does the signal take to get to your brain? That's when you become consciously aware of the heat. So that's an interesting test because the signal's going through. You'd think at such high speed, because it's all electrical, that it wouldn't take any time at all for your brain to register, oh, this is hot. But unless you're one of those people that are really in tune, in touch with their body, most people put their toe in hot water and don't register it for, I don't know how many milliseconds or a second or something like that, implying that to consciously do something, it takes a moment to register consciously. That might be a bad example, but that's one example of the signals that we get. Just like if the frisbee is coming at you, how fast can you register? How fast can you tell your muscles to move? And then how fast do you move? How much of that is all unconscious or conscious? Probably a combination of both, but there's still a faster reaction time unconsciously. So bringing it back to free will, I look at it this way. I have my belief in how a living organism is structured is, and this is a weird topic. I know this isn't about relationships, but it is about people and it's about us and how we think and how we decide. So I think it's interesting to talk about. I like this subject. How living organisms are structured is that each cell is intelligent enough to connect and communicate with another cell to form something larger than itself. Sort of like you have a single house in a suburb. That single house contains people, which we might call cells, and those people, cells, go out and meet other people, cells, and form a neighborhood or a community or a gathering or a get-together or a homeowners association. They start having functions. Literally, they have functions in the neighborhood. And then the neighborhood is part of a city, and the cells in that neighborhood connect and communicate with the cells in the city, and they form larger things, organizations and groups and gatherings and businesses and relationships and all that other stuff. But I look at our body as being set up that way too. I am not a single living organism. I'm a multicellular organism that has billions of cells creating something massive that moves around on this planet. And what that means is that I am not singularly intelligent. I am collectively intelligent. This is my own belief. It may not match your belief, but I see consciousness as a collection of all this intelligence inside of me. Yes, I have a central command, my brain, but that is also made up of a group of cells and a group of tissues and a group of functions and chemicals that have more functions that run the state, that run the city, that run my body. You know, I'm using analogies, of course. But my cells have learned to work together so efficiently that I feel like an individual with free will. However, in order to make a decision, take action, make an intention, have a conscious thought, the cells have learned to communicate so well with each other that the behavior seems very conscious and very much in my control. But perhaps all my decisions were made before I even thought of them. It's like when I met my girlfriend. I met her online, and I told my mom, this girl I met, and how crazy she was. And I just say, you know, she talks about things that I don't talk about, and I just don't think that she's that sane. And my mom's like, oh, you're going to be together someday. And I'm like, there's no way I'm ever going to be together with this person. She's crazy. She talks about things that I will never get on board with. It's just, she's more spiritual than I am. She definitely has a different perspective of things going on in the world and things going on in life. And I just never see myself with her. And she's like, I could tell you're going to be with her. And I'm like, that is nuts. And when it came to the point where her and I were friends for a couple months, and then the idea of being in a relationship came up, I was like, what? I thought we were just going to be friends. And she's like, well, I don't know. If you were closer, maybe we could see what happens. And for the first time, I thought, oh, what would it be like to be in a relationship with this person? Yep, for some reason, my mom already knew. And I had no inclination to be in a relationship with her, but maybe all the cells in my body already knew what was going to happen. Now, that sounds a little spiritual, sounds a little out there, but really, maybe it's just my subconscious had already made that decision, and my conscious mind was rejecting it. I think our consciousness is our filtering system, is our free will. Our unconscious mind may make those decisions, but perhaps our free will is changing those decisions. And that's kind of where I go with this, is that you may be conditioned in a certain way. You may have been nurtured in a certain way. You may have been traumatized or abused to have certain beliefs about the world, and your inclination is to make certain decisions in a certain way, feel certain things about certain people. And really what it is that your unconscious mind already knows what it wants you to do, and your conscious mind has the choice to change that. An example of that would be when my stepfather showed up at my mom's house, and he had been an abusive husband to her for 40 plus years, and finally they got separated and he disappeared for a while, and then he shows back up and I answer the door. So here I am facing my stepfather, someone I've always, I don't want to say submitted to, but that's what it felt like, because I became a child around him. I became the scared little, oh, it's him, I better do anything he asks, just because I'm scared of what his reaction will be. And here I am, a 40-plus-year-old man, answering the door, feeling this little child come up in me. And that would be my unconscious mind knowing how to respond. It's already been made. The decision was, I am going to be a child and I'm going to submit. However, consciously, I fought that decision. I did not want to be that child anymore. It was hard. It was probably one of the most difficult decisions I've ever made in my life, because I had the propensity to be that child. So I chose to fight it. I chose to fight that decision. I took a stand in myself and said, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I don't want to be the child I always was around him. I want to be the man I'm becoming, the healed person that I really feel like I've become, where no one, not even this person who's been one of the biggest threats in my life, no one can take that away from me. I believe I chose through free will to go against what I would be normally inclined to do. So if we're going to look at free will, I would say free will is the choice you make against or for the decisions that are already made in you. If you always revert back to that childlike state in front of those toxic people, or that submissive state, or whatever it is, and suddenly you decide not to, I would say that's free will, allowing you to make a different choice than you would normally make. And it's hard. It can be very hard, because it feels like you're programmed to do it that way. You're programmed to protect yourself. So to do something against that is like almost rewiring, or literally rewiring your brain, so you don't fall into that old rut of where you used to go, where it never got you anywhere. That day I stood up to my stepfather and said, no, you're not welcome to come in this house. That was a very hard decision, but I would look at that as free will, because I was struggling with the decision to become that childlike submissive person that always gave in and just let him do what he wanted. Now I am no longer that person, and that was my big test. That was the big challenge of my life. So I think a free will is tested, and you get an opportunity. I mean, I don't think they're like spiritual tests. They could be, but I think you get opportunities to find out if you really do have free will by making choices that are the hardest choices to make. So I would say that, yes, we have free will consciously in that respect, but everything else, every part of our being, every cell, is used to or wants to do something else. Or it is in alignment with our conscious decision-making. For example, if every part of me wanted to honor myself in that moment and I had no problem saying get lost, then consciously I would still make the free-willed decision to say, sorry, you're not welcome here. That's what I call being in alignment. When you're in alignment with every part of your being, then you're doing things that will lead to success every time. I truly believe that when you are in alignment with your deepest intentions that benefit you to the greatest extent, that you will succeed no matter what. That's a bold statement, because what are you trying to succeed at? And does that mean you're going to be healthy, wealthy, brilliant? I don't know. All I know is that every time I aligned with something I really wanted to do inside, that deepest level intention, it's always worked out. So when my stepfather showed up, yes, I wanted to submit and be that child and let him pass, but my deepest intention was to be courageous and stand up like a man and deny him access to my mom, to the house. It's one of those moments where you go, if there were no consequences, what would I say or do in this moment? That's pretty deep. I mean, when you get the answer to that, that will be your truest, deepest intentions. And then free will allows you to make a choice to take the next step. If you choose to fight against your deepest intention, then you may be allowing an old pattern to take place, which may not result in a good outcome, or at least a productive outcome that gets you into a better place. So I think the personal growth lesson in all this is that when you're faced with a choice in your life and the path that you always take, or that you take most of the time, is your default path, I think a good idea is to ask yourself that question. If there were no consequences, what would I say or do in this moment? And then you'll find out what every cell in your body wants to do. And if you can align with that, you'll find that perhaps the right decision was made, and all this time, you've been taking action against it. Or maybe not. Maybe you'll find that that decision was made and you've been following it all along. But it's a good way to kind of find out if you're just going along a predetermined path, which is an old pattern, or you're actually making decisions that are right for you, which I believe is a path to empowerment. When we come back, I'm going to address a couple things that Bob wrote in his email, and we'll end the show. Be right back. All right, in Bob's email about free will, he was talking to his friend, and his friend said that he thinks that we're guided along in life, that everything happens for a reason, and that we're destined to meet people and things like that. And he says, although I certainly feel that way at times, I don't see how it's compatible with free will. So my question to anyone that has this kind of thought, like how can they be free will if everything is predetermined, is why can't you have both? This is something my girlfriend said, well, why can't we be destined to meet and choose not to? And I thought, that's an interesting way to look at it. Why not? Okay, we're destined to meet, and there's that person, and I'm going to choose not to. I'm going to choose a different path. So that's something philosophical that we can certainly dive into, and it might take several hours to discuss, because there's all kinds of ways to branch off of that and talk about it. But I just choose to adopt that belief and think in any moment I can choose to believe that we were destined to meet. And I can also choose to believe that I can make a choice to not meet or not get to know someone. So the opportunity arises. The question is, do you take it or do you not? And then the questions might come up of, yeah, but I met someone that's awful and now they're in my life. And I would say that every day you choose to be with them is your free will. Just like the day that you choose to not be with them or get help or something is also your free will. So like I said, that could branch off into a million different avenues of thought. But let's go to the next talking point he wanted to make, which is interesting because he says, you know, I dream these things and sometimes they're really weird things. And I think, how can these things come from me? And then he says, do I even have a choice to dream or not? So the first part of that is, I believe our brain tries everything on in every different possible way. And you can test this by stopping what you're doing right now and thinking about something you've never thought of. For example, I can picture myself wearing a pair of skis, riding a horse, down a hill, heading toward a lake, where I fall into the lake. In under the lake, there is an underwater supermarket. I'm just making this stuff up, but I just came up with that on the fly. It's something I've never thought of, and I just made it up instantaneously. If I can do that consciously, then believe me, your unconscious mind is capable of so much more. So I really don't think it's a big deal that we dream weird things or bad things or good things, whatever, because I believe the brain just experiments, and it's experimenting all the time. And like I said, I do this consciously. I try things on. I experiment. What would it be like to be this kind of person? What would it be like to fly the space shuttle? What would it be like to be the victim of an abusive relationship? You know, I try these things on, especially in my coaching practice, so I can empathize, so I can understand, so I can get a different perspective. And I do believe it's the way the brain works naturally, and I'm just taking advantage of that natural way it works so that I can get solutions to the challenges that we all face in life. I did it for myself, and now I do it for other people. So it's just something that I've learned to do to help me and then help others. And anyone can do this. You can do this on the fly, consciously, using your free will. The other thing is a really interesting question, which you said, do I even have a choice to dream? The choice to dream may or may not be the answer for your free will question. For example, if you believe you have free will, then choose not to dream. The real question will be, is if you did convince yourself not to dream or not? Or right before you woke up, did you choose to forget your dream before waking, making you think you never dreamed? That's another philosophical black hole that I'm not going to visit in this episode, but it's something to think about. You also mentioned stuff about, you know, is it possible to have a life where we always choose the right thing to do? I think you have to be really careful with right and wrong. There's the common acceptance of what's right and what's wrong, but you'll find people that just disagree with what's right and what's wrong. So really what it comes down to is what's right for you and what's wrong for you. And even if you, quote, did the right thing or made the right choices, how can you explain the wrong choices that led to good outcomes? How can you explain making a choice that you knew was bad or wrong or unethical or immoral or just a mistake, and it still led to a good outcome? And being in that good outcome, can you look back and go, wow, that was really the wrong choice? Because then you wouldn't have had the good outcome. More philosophical stuff you can explore on your own. But yes, there are common ethics and common morals and common laws that we all tend to follow to avoid the chaos that would normally be had we not developed an intelligence to realize that we need some sort of structure in our life. And that structure is defining right and wrong, defining what's good for us, defining what's bad for us, defining what hurts us, defining what makes us feel better. These little structures that we've created over the millennia have helped us make better choices for ourselves. So my suggestion is to be open to having free will. Never think that you don't have a choice, because sometimes you can make choices that are very uncomfortable but might lead to the best outcome possible. That means, what is your deepest intention? What answer do you get when you ask yourself, what would I really do if there were no consequences? What do I really want to say in this moment? You get the answer, and then you have the opportunity to utilize free will and make that choice. This is all subjective. It's all my opinion. It can all be refuted. We can debate for hours and hours, and we may never agree on everything. But you asked me for my opinion. That's what I'm going to give you. Thank you so much, Bob. What a great way to end 2017. This is the final episode of 2017. Might as well end the year thinking about all the possibilities. We'll be right back. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. It is the new year if you are listening to this fresh. If you're not listening to this fresh, then you're probably not a subscriber, so I would recommend you subscribe. iTunes is usually the place people subscribe, but there's other podcast aggregators and players out there. So just tune in, subscribe, and start listening more often, if you want. And I want to thank Jenny8685 in iTunes. She left a review for the podcast. Says a must have. 5 stars. This is one of my favorite podcasts. His voice is so calming. I automatically relax once I press play. He covers a wide array of topics and provides tips you would actually use. I really enjoy his insight and regularly turn to his shows when I need a reminder. Thank you, Jenny8685. That is very kind of you to say. Thank you for taking the time to rate the show. I appreciate you, and I appreciate everyone that has rated the show, has used the Amazon link on the website, theoverwhelmedbrain.com. That's a little bit of funding for the show, and anyone who's purchased the Overwhelmed Brain book and any workbooks that I've created to help you through the challenges that you're going through in your life. And of course, I thank the patron members of the patron program, patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. They are supporting the show, and they're getting stuff back, too. They're getting all the workbooks I've created, all the ebooks I've created, and also a huge collection so far of private episodes that I've created in that program. So if you're interested in that, you can go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Thank you, patron members. And speaking of workbooks, I want to mention the Mean Workbook. This has been pivotal in many people's relationships, and it is an assessment for emotional abuse and manipulation in your relationship. It's got a 200-point checklist that, depending on how many you check off, will give you just how mild or severe any manipulation or emotional abuse is going on in your life. Plus, and I hear this over and over again from people doing this workbook, it really helps them get clear on what used to be very fuzzy. And what I mean by that is sometimes the crazy making that can go on in these types of relationships makes you feel fuzzy. It makes you not trust yourself. And often the manipulator will make you feel guilty for having autonomous thoughts or good ideas that they turn into a bad idea that make you feel bad about yourself. Or maybe the person is trying to get away with bad behavior and making you feel bad for mentioning their bad behavior. There's all kinds of things that happen in these emotionally abusive relationships. So if you think you're in one of these, or if you want to take the Mean assessment, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/mean, M-E-A-N. The results are always enlightening, not always pleasant, but you'll have the details you need that pinpoint exactly what's going on in your relationship so you don't think you're going crazy. That's what I want. I want you to be prepared. I want you to have the knowledge so that you can make the decisions you need to make next. And of course, the Mean Workbook has all kinds of resources and helps you make the next right choice for you. TheOverwhelmedBrain.com/mean. And finally, I want to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And I'm going to end the show with a request. This is a request for those of you signed up on my newsletter. You know, when you sign up for a newsletter and you're like, I'm not going to give that person my name. Well, when you do that, I don't know what to call you. So if you don't mind, if you're getting a letter from me and it just says hello, comma, or dear, comma, tell me at least your first name so I can personalize it a little bit. I would rather call you something than nothing. Or I also have those people that use like a fake name, like dear number 2. And I don't mean to do that, but I have nothing else to call you. So I'm requesting that. That's my only request. I only make one request a year, and that's the only one I make. So if you are receiving my newsletter and they seem a little bit sterile because I'm not calling you by any name, update me. I want to call you by your name. And if you're not receiving the newsletter, well, you can if you'd like. I talk about things on the newsletter that I don't talk about on the air all the time, or I get into more detail the stuff that I talk about here. You could just go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and you'll see a place to sign up on the right. Or I think even at the top of the screen or one of those annoying pop-ups, you'll see. And you can just put at least your first name and your email address. And if you like it, you can continue getting it. And if not, you could just opt out. I'd love to connect with you there too. Now, that's not all I'm going to say in this final little outro, what they call the outro part instead of the intro. I also want to say that the end of the year also brings reflection. I think that's why people resolve to do things. I'm going to make a resolution to do this, do that, improve my life this way, make more money, get healthier, meet someone new, meet someone old, I don't know. But we tend to do that by reflecting. And I would say instead of reflecting, or at least maybe having reflection as like 5% of what you're going to do, I think 95% of your time needs to be spent getting really clear on what's important to you. I've talked about this on other episodes where you look at what is most valuable to you in each area of your life. What I mean by that is I can look at what's most valuable to me about being in a relationship. I'm in a relationship now, but I still go over what I value in having a romantic, intimate relationship in general. So this is one area of life that I look at my values and go, I value honesty. I value respect. I value laughing. I value someone who likes to touch me and hug me. I value someone with an open mind, someone with intelligence. And I can keep writing these values down until I have a whole list of them. And then in my Stop Self-Sabotage workbook, I tell you how to organize the values, but I'm going to tell you right here. I mean, you can choose to buy that or not, but I like to give you enough to work with so that you can actually start doing this right now, which is you take this entire list of values in the area of life that you're working on, and then you put them in a hierarchy. What's most important to me? Is respect in a relationship most important to me, or is it honesty? Or is it laughing? Or is it this? Or is it that? And that's what I do with my own values. And then what I do is I find out what's being met and what isn't. Because I tell you what, if honesty is at the top of my list and that doesn't happen, she's not being honest with me, then I have a serious talk with her because it is violating my top value. And if it violates your top value, everything else crumbles. Everything else falls apart. And, you know, we tend to look at our past and reflect, like, I'm going to reflect over this year, and, oh, I don't want that to happen again, and I'll never do that again, and I'm going to change this. I think that it's a good practice, but I think you can get more from your time by finding out what's really most important to you in every area of life, and then writing all those values down, or just doing it in your head, or whatever, but it's easier to write them down, and then just putting them in the order that are most important so that you can actually get in touch with those very deep intentions that benefit you. You know, the one I was talking about with free will. It's like, what are my deepest intentions? If I could have anything I want, do anything I want, say anything I want, what would that be? What would that be like? What would that look like? And you start writing down all this stuff. If I could have the perfect relationship, it would look like this. And even if you don't have it now, you just write it down. And then you find out if your current relationship matches that. You find out if your previous relationships have matched that, or you make a plan to make that your future relationship, and then you stick to the plan, because that's the free will part. You actually make the choice to stick to the plan, which might mean if you're looking for that perfect relationship, you give up being in relationships until you find it. A lot of people don't like to do that. I choose to do it. That's just the way I operate. I like to make sure I'm on the best road possible, and I don't settle. I mean, rarely settle. And sometimes I compromise. Sometimes I make compromises. You know, we have to when we're in relationships. I can't have every single thing I want, and that person has nothing that they want. Or they have some things that they want, and I restrict them from having the things that I don't want them to have. You can't be that way. You have to make compromises because we all have differences. And so that's the challenge of being in a relationship, and it's also how you can support each other when you're in the relationship. The best relationships are those that support each other, even in their differences. So I like the idea of creating a list of what you value most in your career, in your health, in relationships, for a perfect family, for a perfect vacation. I mean, you could do it with anything in life, and then see what you come up with. And then what you do is you put them in the order that are most important, and then you align yourself with what's most important, and you make decisions based on that, and you'll find that being in alignment with those deepest intentions for yourself tends to work out best. When you can't meet your own values, that's when things fall apart. So that's what I'm saying, is that instead of just reflecting on the year, just throw that out. Not really. But it's not as important as knowing what you value today and going forward. So yes, it may involve some reflection, because you're going to think, well, when I was in the perfect relationship, it had this and this and this. So yeah, I guess that's fine. You can reflect in that way. And I'm just kidding about throwing out reflection. I'm just saying, don't use it as your only guide to behavior that you're going to do or actions you're going to take in the future. Just use it as an exercise to understand what you value most, and then get into alignment with what you value most. And you'll see things start to work out. And yes, it can be scary sometimes, because what you value most may not be what you have today. That doesn't mean it can't change, though. So always keep your mind open so that when you're ready to take that step, you can step into your power. And that'll help you be firm in your decisions and actions, so that when you get into alignment with your values, you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.